For today's show, we will continue our coverage and analysis of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and its impact on black people in the Gulf Coast. Our first guest will be Wilma Subra, a longtime environmental activist in the Gulf Coast and president of the Subra Company in New Iberia, Louisiana, talking to us about the toxic aftermath of both Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. Then we'll have on Corinne Carey, researcher for Human Rights Watch, who will discuss with us an investigative report recently released on prisoners in New Orleans left in their cells for days during the hurricane after prison guards evacuated the buildings. Finally, at the end of the show, we will hear from you, the listener, so, you know, heat up those, you know, dialing digits so you can give us a call later in the show. But first, we will start with today's show with my co-host, Damon Azali, reading excerpts from Eric Mann's recently released letter in support of the movement in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Notes on strategy and tactics.
So everybody should imagine that I'm giving you a really glossy quarter sheet flyer right now, because I want you to save the date flyer here, imaginary. Everybody imagine it in their cars. So we're doing a fundraiser for folks, movement groups actually in New Orleans and Louisiana and the Gulf Coast states. So what we want folks to do is to come out to this. There's been a couple announcements that actually have the incorrect date. The correct date is October 6th, so not this Thursday, but the following Thursday, at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, which is 3300 Wilshire Boulevard. It's going to be at 7 o'clock, and we want folks to RSVP. You can do that by calling 213-387-2800, extension 28. And we'll have a lot more about that as we go through the show. So as Manuel said, I'm going to read some excerpts from a letter that Eric wrote in support of the movement in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And it's broken into two different parts. One is the kind of historic overview, which I'm going to read a piece from. And that's titled Reopening the Historic Record of the Achievements of the Black Liberation Movement, a Critical Building Block for a New Reconstruction. So that's the first sentence. The second piece is demands that would be helpful that Eric thinks we would think, because we've been in a lot of conversations about this, that we would think would be helpful for demands for basically black self-determination. So I'm going to start off reading from a section titled, and this also, this letter will be, it's a long letter, for about 38 pages at this particular point. Very detailed. This is going to be available at the event. So the part I'm going to read is called The Second Racist Counter-Revolution, The New Right. Eric situates it as there's been two Reconstruction periods. So one is Reconstruction period after the Civil War, followed by a counter-revolution of Jim Crow segregation. Then the second Reconstruction would be the Civil Rights and the Black Power Movement, followed by what I'm about to read now, which is kind of the era of Nixon and how the right has basically flipped the tables and is like the part of the second counter-revolution. And the premise of this is that the third Reconstruction has potential to build off of movement groups and the black liberation struggle in New Orleans right now. So here we go. Letter to support the Gulf Coast Movement by Eric Mann. Second Racist Counter-Revolution, The New Right. The story of the second racist counter-revolution that followed the second black reconstruction in America begins with three simple points. One, it happened. Two, we are still living through it. And three, New Orleans is a powerful and painful reflection of its impacts and an opportunity to launch the third reconstruction, a social revolution based on an international alliance against racism, national oppression, and empire. The national black community has been under attack from a ferocious counter-revolution almost before the Civil Rights Revolution got off the ground. The white backlash, which included white voters abandoning the Democratic Party in droves, began from the first day the federal government set any troops to protect civil rights workers. From first day one, black people got a job through the affirmative action program. From the first day, one black person was registered to vote through civil rights organizing. By 1964, the country was split. The Democratic Party, through the election of Lyndon Johnson, tried desperately to hold together a white-black coalition. But despite significant if minority anti-racist white support for civil rights and the usual well of decency among a significant minority of whites, including some in the South, the vast majority of white people and white voters and are strongly to rabidly anti-black. They had voted Democrat for a century to punish the Republicans, the party of Lincoln, for defeating the Confederacy in the Civil War, and for sending federal troops to the South after the Civil War to enforce the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. They voted Democrat one last time in 1964 out of history and reflex, and out of support for the racist Dixiecrats who still controlled every Southern state and virtually all the key positions in Congress. They saw Lyndon Johnson, a Southerner from Texas, as a traitor. And after the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and just 3 years of the federal government trying to enforce those laws, they bolted en masse to the Republican Party, where they wallowed ever since. By 1968, Richard Nixon was campaigning on a Southern strategy that assured the White South through the racialized coded discourse of law and order that he would not enforce civil rights, and the White South rewarded him by voting Republican for the first time in its history. But the Nixon vote was not even the worst development. In the same election, George Wallace, governor of Alabama, an arch right-wing racist, ran on a states' rights and defense of segregation platform, arguing that even the Republicans were not racist enough. Nixon carried most of the Southern states, with Wallace carrying, that is, winning the electoral votes in the Gulf Coast states, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Georgia. Nixon barely won the popular vote with 43%. Hubert Humphrey, the Democrat, with 42%, and Wallace with 13%, including many white working class votes in the North, where white anger about black power and the urban rebellions had reached a fever pitch. Just as with the first Reconstruction, the counter-revolution did not simply try to stop the progress of civil rights. It tried and succeeded to inflict a subsequent reign of terror against black people, to reverse, not simply halt, civil and economic rights. Richard Nixon and George Wallace's plan worked, and now the Republican and the Democrats abandoned the black community. With the assassinations of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, the brilliantly manipulative 1978 Balky case, in which a white applicant for medical school claimed the now infamous reverse discrimination and was upheld by a 5-4 vote on the Supreme Court, and the later rise of Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, a right-wing counter-revolution based on neoliberalism and counterinsurgency was in full swing. By then, the late 70s and early 80s, the civil rights movement was in full retreat, as the black community had been punished by the Republicans and the Democrats, had suffered painful and debilitating splits, and could not organize nor fully contemplate a third road. In 1984 and 1988, the Rainbow Coalition, led by presidential challenge Jesse Jackson, showed an enormous potential for a black-led, multiracial, progressive politics in the country. But in 88, after Jackson had came in an amazing second to Michael Dukakis in the Democratic primaries, the Democratic Party silenced him and his demands. Later, a rising Democratic Leadership Council, led by Bill Clinton, vowed to move the party to the center, to downplay discussions of civil rights, and try to win back white voters with a colorblind economics appeal, orientated appeal. It's the economy, stupid. Each year, the Democrats have moved further to the right on race. Unfortunately, like the racist Democrat George Wallace, Jesse Jackson was not willing to abandon the Democrats and run an independent anti-racist campaign to punish the Democrats if necessary, and an effort to build an independent left that could at least try to push the party back to a civil rights orientation. By 1992, Arkansas Governor Clinton implored black leaders, sick of 12 years of Reagan and Bush, that in order to win a national election, they needed two white men from the South to run, Clinton and Gore, and to work like hell to keep the remaining white voters inside the Democratic Party. In turn, Clinton promised, if elected, with no civil rights pressure to his left, to provide a massive amount of black appointments and contracts, which he did. And in exchange, his administrations undermined due process and habeas corpus with the Effective Death Penalty Act. ended welfare as we know it and sabotaged the movement in California to protect affirmative action, putting the movement on the defensive with a reactionary slogan, affirmative action, mend it, don't end it, as if blacks have already gotten too much, and then guaranteed the defeat of civil rights opposition by withholding promised Democratic Party funds for the No on 209 campaign. In practice, Clinton gave ideological support to racists, while he, in perhaps his most disgraceful move, privately told black supporters that he was the first black president. The Clinton debacle was followed by racism of Gore and then Kerry. Gore didn't even challenge the 2000 presidential election results in Florida, allowing the conservative Scalia-Thomas Supreme Court to throw the election to Bush. Michael Moore's greatest historical contribution may be his documentation of the excruciatingly painful scene of black congresspersons trying to defend Al Gore and protest the election results, while Gore turned his most loyal, devoted black supporters into the futile hope to placate again and again white Southern and suburban voters for future elections. By 2004, John Kerry, who ran one of the worst campaigns with regard to black and civil rights, was paid back for his racial appeal to white voters. By white and especially male voters, voting instead for George W. Bush in record numbers. The one final act of how brutal the second counter-revolution has been to the black community comes from the Third World Traveler Prison Watch website. This is a quote. The number of black people in prison and jail on parole and on probation in the U.S. increased 300%. From 1980, since the election of Ronald Reagan, through the year 2000, to more than 6 million. The number of people in prison increased from 320,000 to almost 2 million in the same period. This buildup has targeted the poor, especially blacks. In 1990, though blacks were only 13% of the U.S. population, they are 50% of all prison inmates, 1 million people. In 2000, one out of three young black men was either locked up, on probation, or on parole. Ending the quote. This incomprehensible level of pain and suffering is bitter harvest of the tragically bipartisan white supremacy as national policy. Explain some of why black organizers put forth an analysis of the national oppressed people and sets the historical frame for the events of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Next kind of section in here, again, I'm reading from Letter in Support of the Gulf Coast Black Liberation Movement. I kind of changed the title right there, that Eric Mann wrote, and this is talking about the possible third reconstruction. Gulf Coast, the third reconstruction. As we turn to the proposals for action and remedy, those black groups and individuals in New Orleans, the Gulf Coast, and throughout the U.S., who can explain their dilemma, their experience, and their demands in a black-centered civil rights, anti-racist, and self-determination framework should be supported by all progressive people. Progressive people of all races need to show intellectual and political solidarity and to register the profound courage that is required to put forth that point of view. And how strong is the bipartisan backlash against black groups and individuals who choose to think and express themselves in this context? This movement has already put the Bush administration and the Democrats on the defensive. Responding to black rage, articulated in Kanye West's angry observation, George Bush doesn't care about black people, Bush was forced to say in his September 15 speech to the country that poverty has roots in its historical and racial discrimination, which cut off generations from the opportunity of America. We have the duty to confront this poverty with bold action. Headlines on the internet actually read, Bush talks about poverty, as if it was a major news scoop. Still, as we will see, Bush's proposal for enterprise zones, his $61 billion corporate giveaway, betrays real intentions. His much more powerfully coded, New Orleans will rise again, is little more than a long-standing Dixiecrat theme, the White South will rise again. Still, this is the reflection of the power of a resurgent movement. As Jesse Jackson has twice gone after Bill Clinton by demanding that the Clinton-Bush Sr. Katrina response team does not represent black people and a black must be appointed to help head up the relief efforts, and to finger Clinton lobbyists, not just Bush, for the corporate raiding of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. The heroic work of movement groups in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast is helping to shape the terms of the debate. Today, not only in New Orleans, but throughout the Gulf Coast states of Alabama, Mississippi, throughout every major urban center from New York to Houston to Los Angeles, there's urgent need for a third reconstruction. This effort should be led by a Black Latino alliance as part of a broader alliance of all oppressed nationality peoples, Asian Pacific Islanders, indigenous peoples, reaching out to anti-racist and progressive whites, and allying internationally with the peoples and nations of the third world to challenge the decadence and racism of the U.S. empire. We must use all our resources and resolve to try and ensure that the Black community had multiracial movements that can make historic intervention to demand Black self-determination and the right of return to all 350,000 Black people in New Orleans and the Black community throughout the Gulf Coast. Only if the people get home will there be a social base for a long-term struggle for power. That single demand, the right of return, is the key link to reconstruct the social base of people in the Black Belt South. We must not allow this corporate class to use this tragedy to profit binge with public funds while the white corporate upper and middle classes occupy the Black community's assets. I guess the last thing I just want to end with before we get to our guest is a couple of things around the demand that's in Eric's letter. I'm just going to read them really quickly as a teaser to excite you to go, oh my God, people haven't been talking about this since 1973. So here's some of the demands titled Notes on a Third Reconstruction, Framing Programmatic Concepts. One, the rights of self-determination for Black people in the South and throughout the U.S. Two, state unity of the Black Belt South, new governmental districts for Black power. Three, reparations. Four, the right of return and resettlement for all Black evacuees. Five, Katrina was an environmental injustice. Environmental justice must shape the reconstruction. Six, the critical role of international allies. One, or A, take the humanitarian aid from Venezuela and Cuba. B, take the human rights case against the United States, the United Nations. Seven, no to the police state, yes to the social welfare state. Eight, the public sector must lead, the private sector must follow orders. Nine, the urban poor in every major city in the U.S. as the prisoners and the homeless must be highlighted. We cannot allow the government to pit one group of oppressed people against another, or even one group of Black people against another. 10. Native rights and immigrant rights are everybody's fight. Defend immigrants seeking disaster aid. Fight for the sovereignty and aid to Native American tribes. And 11. U.S. out of Iraq. Bring the war home.
Thank you, Damon.